We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
We decided that Really Great Reading was a program that fit really well with everything that we had been learning about the science of reading. And so we decided to move forward with that for the school year. And the results have really been pretty astounding. It's not every day that you see something that makes an immediate impact and really moves the dial for students. And we've seen that.
Our structured literacy programs rooted in the science of reading are the real deal. Launch into the school year with a reading program that gets results and watch your district reach new heights of literacy success. Learn more about the impact we've had on schools and districts.
Hello and welcome. We are so thrilled to have you join us for this timely and critical and important topic, closing the reading gap for EL learners. And as we all know, our multilingual learners are already here. We hope this session will provide solutions and options for the many of the school districts who are with us today. I'm Donna Wright. I am honored to serve as the moderator for this important discussion this afternoon. I'm a recently retired school superintendent in Tennessee with over 40 plus years in public education. I continue to serve as a consultant and advisor for school districts around the country and currently serve as a lead superintendent with AASA, leading the National Women's Leadership Consortium. We are pleased to have two nationally recognized leaders in education, Dr. Michael Hinojosa, superintendent in residence at the Council of Great City Schools, and Dr. Anthony Smith, deputy superintendent of Denver Public Schools, lead our discussion focusing on EL learners and how to best to serve EL students and support our teaching staff. We will also be joined by Jimmy Waits. She is with Really Great Reading. She's a senior marketing specialist, and she will be the one that will open the polls as we go through our discussion today. I want to thank our sponsor, Really Great Reading, for hosting the broadcast. It is an honor to be moderating this important conversation, and without Really Great Reading support, we would not be doing this broadcast today. For future information for our audience, this is the first broadcast of four in a series that Really Great Reading will sponsor going through the summer. Again, I want to thank our sponsor, Really Great Reading. They are noted for their structured literacy programs that are grounded in the science of reading. With over 18 years of expertise, Really Great Reading provides educators with innovative solutions in the science of reading. They have a comprehensive suite of resources, professional development, and teaching tools to support literacy instruction. Their programs support every learner in becoming proficient readers. Thus, the title of today's broadcast, Closing the Gap for EL Learners. With that, I want to post another resource that is available to our audience. Make note of the QR code in the center. This is Coach's Corner. It's a free on-demand webinar, and it's a new two-part on-demand that was tailored strictly for administrators and coaches. Now, the thing that's really important about this, and again, we'll post this again so you can access that QR code if you're not quick enough to get a snapshot of it. The webinar is centered on building the capacity for coaches, equipping them with the knowledge and skills necessary to effectively observe and evaluate key components of foundational skill lessons. That becomes important, particularly when we have teachers that are specifically working with our students as far as with these skills, but also having the coaches that will have the tools that they can provide with feedback and effectively growing teachers that are focusing on literacy. Today, we're going to focus on closing the reading gap for EL learners. And again, cannot emphasize enough that your multilingual learners are here, as many of us know. Low literacy rates are no secret when it comes to the reality of all our students, and even more so for our English learners. Today, we're going to discuss the application of the science of reading when it comes to English learners and the current gaps that have yet to be met in the literacy space. So to start, this conversation. Jimmy, if you will, if you'll launch that first poll to give us an idea from the audience what they see as their biggest challenge. Jimmy?
I've just launched the first poll. What is your biggest challenge implementing a science of reading program with EL Solutions in your district? Training teachers, staffing, funding, and EL resources. And I'm sharing those voting percentages. It looks like people are selecting training teachers and EL resources. I'm going to bring this back over to the panelists, and I think this is a great way to start off this discussion. Are these two challenges that you guys face when you're implementing a science of reading program with EL Solutions within your district?
Okay, Jimmy, and that's something that when as I go for introductions with our two speakers today, that's something that in their introductory comments that they can also address to see if this is indicative of what they've experienced in their districts and what they're seeing, particularly with Dr. Hinojosa as far as around the country as well.
And it looks like people are done putting in their votes, and the highest one is training teachers, and right behind that is EL resources, then third is staffing, and fourth is funding. So it looks like the biggest challenge that people face when implementing a science of reading program with EL Solutions is training teachers.
Okay, well, let's meet our panelists for today's conversation then. So, Dr. Hinojosa, even though you do not need an introduction, please share a brief professional bio with us and some introductory comments on your life's work around student achievement for all students. And why is this conversation so important today?
Yeah, well, thank you, Donna, for having me, and I look forward to participating. Yeah, I was a superintendent for 27 years, 13 in Dallas, and in six different systems. And part of this is personal because I'm an immigrant, and I grew up in the inner city of Dallas, and I was a teacher and a student in Dallas, and couldn't even get an interview as an assistant principal. I had to go off, learn how to be an administrator and then a superintendent, and I was able to serve twice in Dallas. And just to put a little context on there, Dallas has 48% English learners. That's 71,000 English learners. That's more English learners than El Paso has students, than San Antonio has students, than San Francisco has students, and close to what Denver has. You know, so if we don't do well with these students, we can't do well at all. And a lot of, when I was first hired in Dallas, we had 1,300 classrooms in 2005 that did not have a certified bilingual teacher. And I had to go to Puerto Rico, Mexico, and Spain to hire people. And then the issues that are brought up here, training them, and then training them with what? And English is the language of commerce. That's non-negotiable. But, you know, being biliterate is a skill that a white person can acquire, a black person can acquire, and a second and third generation Latino who does not speak, read, or write Spanish. But I went to a conference and where, just like English is the language of commerce, the science of reading is the language of reading. There's no doubt, it's non-negotiable. English is non-negotiable, but we want students to be biliterate. Well, the science of reading is non-negotiable, but what I have discovered is that because of the way phonemes work and the way people with different dialects instruct and the sounds are different in the different languages, if you do not augment the science of reading, you're missing a huge portion of your population. What I described is not just Dallas. In the Council of Great City Schools, out of 77 districts, only 10 of them have less than double digits in English learners. in Texas, of the 50 largest districts in Texas, only three of them do not have double digits in English learners. So I think we've proven that we can reproduce. We're everywhere, and we need people that can help us. And so that's why this topic is so important, to make sure that our students have access to the good stuff.
Thank you. And we'll come back to some of your comments, because that's going to really help us as far as expound on some of the things that we're going to be discussing. Dr. Tony Smith, if you'll share with us your professional bio with us, and if you will, touch on the important work you are leading in Denver Public Schools around English learners, and really the focus on why.
Yeah, I appreciate that. First, thank you for allowing me to participate, and appreciate how Dr. Hinojosa has kicked us off. I'm Tony Smith, been in Denver Public Schools for roughly 20 years, have served as a teacher, a school leader, assistant principal, regional instructional superintendent, served in both charter and public, and most recently in the charter space, KIPP Texas DFW, where we led extensive turnaround efforts. And this is an issue, as Dr. Hinojosa said, that is not germane to one part of the country, but to the entire country. And here in Denver, we are under the longest serving consent decree, which has allowed us to really enhance our multilingual education, but also think about transitional native language. And this is really important to me, because as a school leader, I saw the benefit of what strong professional learning in that space could do. But I also saw that it was an opportunity for us to address our biases around kids who don't speak English. And just because a student doesn't speak English doesn't mean that they're not intelligent. And it was a way, and it is a way, for us to accelerate their ability to engage and enhance their quality of life, but also share their brilliance with us. And I noticed too many kids being pinged as special education or 504 or just overall deficient because they didn't speak English as a first language. And challenging that through strong instruction, teacher training, and support has been something that we need to do, and need to do immediately. And that's why it's such a strong driver for me, because this is a conversation we need to get in front of as soon as possible, and support our students in integrating and thriving in our system. So I just appreciate the opportunity to learn more. And I think Doc is right on. English is the language of commerce, and we have to support our kids in learning that language and address them and provide them the tools to show their brilliance.
Mm-hmm. I like that final comment. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, for the audience, we are posing several strategic questions to our panelists today. And first question, and I'm going to have Tony lead off on this particular question. You know, Tony, what is currently happening across districts within your state? And again, you know, we're talking about Colorado right now, which has made a lot of the news when you look at the influx of the number of EL students coming into the state. And with that, what is your experience in your district, and what led you to start looking for EL solutions within your district? What was the prompt?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, you know, as you said, Colorado has been in the news, and we in Denver have received tens of thousands of new arrivals just since October. I think the district right now is just shy of 4,000 new students in the past 3 to 4 months. And so that has provided us a tremendous opportunity and has stretched our system extremely thin. You know, when we think about how we educate students, we have to understand that our new arrival students come in not only with varying degrees of schooling, but also a tremendous amount of travel trauma associated with their journey, and then the stress of being in a new place. And so when we think about how we're teaching, how do we make instruction accessible to these students? And what we noticed is we needed to enhance our teaching professional learning and also our tools to support students in learning in a consistent manner. So they weren't just getting one thing in one place, but we had a consistent, coherent strategy and approach. And that's what allowed us to that's what sparked us looking for an additional EL solution within our district. How do we create consistency for students and make sure that we're not jumping around and providing a level of instruction for them that allows them to grow and gain English language in the fastest way possible? And, you know, I would be remiss to say if teacher retention hadn't been an issue, not only for us, but schools around the country, and how do we develop a consistent understanding around what it takes to teach student learning through CKLA, but also engage in EL solutions that are interventions and supportive of students' needs. So that really sparked us. We have an influx of new arrivals and our need to be consistent, coherent, and clear in driving their success.
Okay, and that sort of goes along, Tony, then with the, you know, when we saw the pain points that came up on that first poll, as far as looking at that consistency, as far as even with teacher training. Yes. And so, and which becomes an equitable asset as well, going across your district, making sure that you have consistency and really looking to make sure that teachers are trained and trained appropriately, but knowing that they're with even transient movement, I guess, through your district, that there's no loss of fidelity. Is that an issue as well?
It is. We have, it's no secret that Denver and the city of Denver and Denver Public Schools have partnered to provide solutions for our unhoused and new arrival students. But those aren't permanent solutions. And as we work to a permanent solution, creating consistency is extremely important. Again, not only for the students, as you mentioned, but also for our teachers and putting our teachers in the best position to be successful with any student that walks in the door, but particularly our new arrivals.
Doc, you know, as many of us know, you have a national perspective because it's something, particularly being a superintendent in residence, that even though with your background and your experiences as a district superintendent, what would you add, again, looking at it across the country based on your broad experiences, what would you add to this conversation with this question?
Yeah, people always want a simple solution to a complex issue, and it's not that simple. And especially when you think about the context of our people participating in this webinar. Some are from urban centers, when at least in urban centers, you have people who have the appreciation and for this issue. But then you also have people that are in rural areas and they need the support. And there's not infrastructure in their district or in their system to provide exactly what the resources or the training for the teachers who have this job. In fact, in a lot of places in rural America, they have teacher assistants who carry the load of helping our English learners. And then when you get in the cities, it's the volume. And then when you get in the suburbs, it's maybe not the biggest attention because we all worry about our special needs students or other student groups. But this group of students have very little agency. Our special education students, their parents, they've figured out how to find an advocate for them. The English learners very seldom will speak up. They're just glad to have this opportunity to learn English and hopefully keep their native language. And so when I went to this event in Washington, D.C., and it made you feel guilty that if you weren't implementing science of reading, that, you know, you were some kind of evil person. But they didn't talk about how it's different for English learners because of the other issues that they have to overcome to be able to do well with the science of reading. And so immediately when I went to that conference, I turned to the specialist at the Council of Great City Schools, and Gabby identified these are the things that you need to augment. And then as I went back to the state of Texas, I started asking them, and luckily there are trade groups or trade organizations like the, in Texas, it's the Bilingual Educators Association that knows how important this is. And so they become the advocates for the families and students who have no voice and have no agency. And so to close, I think good things happen by design, not by accident. And if you have to try to stumble into a resource or a professional development to make these teachers and teacher assistants better, then it's not going to happen at scale. It's going to happen wherever they run into it. But I think this can be overcome based upon the issues that the people had at the beginning of this webinar. And there's some opportunities that are out there and people are now listening. And in fact, most of the publishers have started to pivot because they have realized this is something you cannot ignore. You know, a lot of people complained about No Child Left Behind, but in reality, what it did, it held us accountable for every student group. And English learners are a student group that are very important.
Okay. Thank you. What are your thoughts on how to make the science of reading applicable to English learners? And Doc, you've already touched on that a little bit, but I'm going to ask you to respond to this question as far as really underscoring the word applicable to English learners.
Yeah, and that's what I've been alluding to all along, is that it needs to be augmented. There are certain sounds in other languages, in particular Spanish, that are not part of the phonemic awareness things that have been very clearly identified and definitely everyone needs to have. So that needs to be understood. And then also many times when you go with sounds, when the teachers that are in front of the students have a very heavy accent, the sounds aren't the same as if you have a native speaker using these sounds. So these are very complex, minute issues that if they're not addressed, then there will be gaps in achievement for students. And it's very unfortunate because, like what Tony said earlier, these students are bright. They just need the right opportunities to be able to have that. And if you design your professional development and your resources, professional learning to address these issues, then you can overcome the challenges that these students might have. So I think it's really important that the providers have this tool in place to make sure that the students can have access.
Tony, any follow-up comments to, again, as far as what you're seeing and experiencing right now?
Yeah, I just want to double down on Doc's point around syllabic versus phonemic processing and how that interplay of language acquisition goes hand in hand and how we need tools to support that. I'd also say thinking about how we support teachers in mirroring the previous ideas of using, context to support language acquisition versus skill development and thinking about the processing aspects of that. So I think there's a couple different things that we can do, but I think Doc nailed it right on.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Jimmy, we have a new poll.
I'm going to lead into the next poll, and these are challenges that you face in the classroom. So what are the biggest literacy challenges that you face when teaching ELs in the classroom? Is it curriculum, bilingual teachers, time, or professional development? And I have the results in real time, and it looks like people are the biggest challenges people face is curriculum and time. Oh, is this something that you would agree with? Mm. Yep.
That's pretty compelling.
Led in the polls, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it looks like the biggest literacy challenge is curriculum. And then the following one is time. And then behind that is professional development and bilingual teachers.
Okay. Which is a nice segue is into the next question that I'll lead out with Doc on this one. This question, Doc, what major factors contribute most to the literacy gap? And again, you've touched on this, but this is an opportunity again, and I'm watching what's being populated over here with our attendee chat and more or less not only underscoring and reiterating what you're saying, but what major factors contribute most to the literacy gap among English language learners?
Well, and to build off the responses from our participants, having the right curriculum in place is certainly that addresses English learners. There's a lot of great curriculum out there, but they don't necessarily address the needs of English learners. But there's three parts to the curriculum: the written, the taught, and the assessed curriculum. So even if you have the written one, sometimes it doesn't get executed. And then how do you assess whether the students are learning or not? And so for English learners, that is a double whammy. And of course, time. I mean, in metro areas, you know, you have a bilingual, you have a very sophisticated now dual language program, and you have students that are participating in that. But if you're not in a school that has that approach, time becomes a challenge. I mean, we have so many things to do about interventions and accommodations for the students and unfortunately, a lot of these English learners are very quiet. They're not going to say much. And unless you assess their performance, you don't know that they have these gaps. And so our participants are spot on. You have to have a curriculum, and it has to be executed with fidelity. But you have to prioritize the time to do it. And if people don't make a fuss about it, teachers are so busy. They just keep trucking right along. But I can certainly see where our participants, our audience is really spot on about making sure this happens in every classroom.
Yes, absolutely. Tony?
Yeah, I'm gonna double down on what Doc says around the curriculum, particularly the written, taught, and assess aspects of it, and how we use those tools to accelerate the learning of English learners. I'd also say the time in the schedule, but also time for teachers to understand and process, to look at the assessments, to understand the curriculum is huge. I'd also like to double down on what leads to a lot of our literacy gaps, not only between our English language learners, but between our Black and Brown students. When you think about level of expectation and the understanding and the idea that we can. And I alluded to it earlier, you know, just because a student doesn't know English doesn't mean they're not intelligent, that they're not bright, and that they can't. And I think marrying the idea that language is not an indicator of intelligence, but more so the opportunity to teach kids and to show their brilliance through these tools, is a mindset shift that some of us may need to make. And the time to make those shifts and challenge those assumptions and the curriculum and tools that we have confidence and really clarity about, that they can do the job of helping our students learn, I think is a really important piece. But this, the idea of the gap comes down to a few particular things. And I think one of them is expectation and what we believe our students can do and how we enter the conversation with our kids, with our families, in a way that allows them to thrive.
Exactly. And I'm watching again as our attendee chat continues to populate. And I'm seeing over and over, particularly some of the school districts that are facing anywhere from 60 to 100 different languages and dialects, which, again, it would be a whole different conversation, because when we look at this, it might even be bigger than looking specifically at one group, but looking at how expansive it is around the country. The next question: what types of support and training do you see are lacking for our English language teachers in the classroom? Tony, I want to hand this question to you, because right now this is some of the work that you are leading again in Denver. It's in the news. There's a lot of districts that are looking to see how you move forward as far as getting not only the support, but training that you are seeing that are lacking, but now you're trying to implement. So if you could expand on that a little and what you're doing, because you really are the pioneer in some in this work.
Yeah, I just want to shout out our multilingual education, our MLE team, who has done a tremendous job of really wrapping supports around teachers. And so one of the things that they've done really, really well is the idea of training is in isolation, a great idea. And how do you model for teachers? How do you support them? How do you create opportunities to coach them? And again, as Dr. Inahosa talked about, that time, how do you give people time to learn, right? The teachers a time and opportunity to learn, but also model in tandem with what that looks like with expert teachers who can show and help create a schema for teachers as they move forward. I also think about in Denver, you know, we had a lot of teacher turnover, as many of our districts have, and the the upswing with CKLA and the gaps that exist in that original training, now compounding the idea that new arrivals have come and we need to create opportunities for them to learn. Again, making it doable by modeling, supporting, being there side by side has been a key piece of our formula for getting teachers up and running in some of our most impacted schools. And then in every district you have someone, we are fortunate here in Denver to have a number of teachers who are just really, really, really good. And we lean on those teachers to help us be thought partners. And what does it look like for strong professional learning? Where are they seeing issues in the curriculum? Where are they seeing issues in the professional development? How do we use them to model and support teachers who are newer at the profession so that they can be successful? And then I think as Doc, as he talked about it before, getting that buy-in and creating additional opportunities for our teachers through our community partners, our Congress of Hispanic Educators and our Latino Education Associations, what additional trainings or supports can they provide and supplement for teachers to then help drive that efficacy? And lastly, how do we engage parents? Parents need to understand how we are working with their students and what we are doing in a way that they can buy in and be a partner in this. And I think that's the idea. Again, I go back to they want the best for their students and they're overcoming a lot of issues. How can we streamline this and provide as much support as possible in a clear, coherent, and consistent way? So those are just a few things that we're doing, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention our Department of Multilingual Education, who has really stood up modeling and opportunities to work side by side with some of our newer teachers to drive their efficacy in this area.
Tony, expanding a little bit more on what you just shared, because let's go back 5 years, and particularly looking at Denver Public Schools becoming a destination point for many of the families that are coming into the country, and whether it's personal intent, it that really is not the issue. But the idea of what does a school district do when you know that, looking back 5 years, looking forward now, what do you do to really get not even prepared, but your staffing, your support staff, buildings, what are you having to do to prepare for the shift in your student population?
Yeah, we have done whatever it takes. I mean, I would also use the term beg, borrow, and steal in partnerships with the city of Denver and community partners to understand where our neediest communities are, where our biggest influx of new arrivals is happening. And then how do we stand up supports that are really heavily predicated on the needs of our kids? I mentioned before, kids have travel trauma. They have the stress of not knowing a language. And then they also have the stress of the day-to-day lives. And the idea that they have temporary housing and need to adapt and acclimate to the United States. And so we have community hubs that are predicated on supporting not only those families, but also those kids. And then how do we use our community resources to engage them in meeting those Maslow's hierarchy of needs so that they can come to school ready to learn? We've done a tremendous job in partnering with the city and county of Denver, as well as other community organizations to really drive a bubble of support for our students, because they didn't have choices in some of the trips that they made. And we want to make sure that they have the best experience and best opportunities possible. So we have shifted in any way, shape, and form needed to ensure that our students get what they need, whether it be itinerant teachers, whether it be standing up additional professional development, hiring new teachers in general, shifting resources from school to school, whatever is needed, we have done.
Is there any conversation as far as even looking at supporting teachers that might be interested in getting credentialed as an English language teacher?
We do. We have stood that up through our Office of Talent and also provided stipends and supports through scholarshiping individuals to do that, but as well as our para to teacher pipeline. We have a number of para educators who speak Spanish and are bilingual, and how do we support them in engaging in the collegiate system to get their teaching license? And so how do we grow our own as well as attract outside talent? But I think you're absolutely right. Whatever we can do to build contextual understanding and grow it from the inside out has been really, really helpful to us. I think in addition, our Office of Talent just stood up our International Educator Institute, which brings teachers from across the world, particularly Spanish speaking countries. I think Doc alluded to it, going to Puerto Rico, Venezuela, Colombia, to get teachers and bring them over and sponsor them to engage our students here in Denver Public Schools as a way for us to support multilingual educators. And Spanish being the primary issue that we're dealing with through our new arrivals, we have a number of students that speak a variety of languages, over 200, that we're engaging in those processes as well. So language and language acquisition is an issue that spans multiple student groups, multiple cultures, and we're trying to find every possible solution to help us engage these students.
Doc, looking at your leadership role with the Council of Great City Schools, is this a conversation or discussion that you're hearing among many of the district leaders as far as a challenge that they're seeing, not only the lack of EL teachers, but, you know, looking for solutions as far as to something that's growing?
Yeah, it's very common on their minds. And in fact, there's a bilingual task force that the council has put together and done some research and trying to actually go out and make sure that you find tools to help them. One of our participants put out an issue that is very important. In Dallas, we happen to have 97% of our students that are Spanish is their native language. We have very small Urdu and Hindu and a few others. But even in Spanish, there's a lot of different dialects. People from Cuba and Puerto Rico and Mexico, the dialects are so different. And even so, that makes it complex. But can you imagine, like in Minnesota, where you have people from all over the world and it's not 97% Spanish, and you have people in New York and Florida and, you know, along the West Coast? It makes those challenges even more complex. If it's challenging enough in one language, can you imagine the things that are available and support? Now, language acquisition is common, but still being able to interface and support families in university towns where they may have a lot of their professors and their students coming from all over the world, you know, it creates future challenges. And those are the types of communities that are in the Council of the Great City Schools. So that then, you know, in Tennessee, there's some large counties, and there are, in those large counties, there are a lot of English learners, and it's just that they're spread out so far. And then a lot of people don't even realize, like in places like Iowa and in the Midwest, because of the agriculture support that they need, families and immigrants are everywhere. And if they're an immigrant, people are always asking me, how are there 47% English learners in Dallas? Well, that's because they're the ones that make this economy run with the service industry, and their kids got to go to school somewhere, so we welcome them. And by the way, we never apologize for our demography. We're proud of these students.
Absolutely. Thank you. Hey, we have another question coming up. What patterns or consistent messaging do you hear in conversation as to why science of reading might not apply to English learners? Doc, back to you again. You know, what are you experiencing as to why the science of reading might not apply to English learners?
Well, I think it applies significantly only if you augment, only if you provide. I mean, there's, I think, a debate about which, you know, literacy approach is just about over. But you got to make modifications or adjustments or accommodate for students who have further needs that are really identified. I think the science of reading has really gained a lot of momentum, and justifiably so. But you cannot ignore and omit certain student populations. And so I think at one time, you know, people might have argued the other way, but I think there's less people saying that you don't have to have the science of reading.
Tony, what would you add if you led the work in Denver?
Yeah, I would agree. I think Doc hit it right on the nail. I think the transition to the science of reading has been something that people have struggled with. I also want to just highlight, you know, this idea of cultural competency has been one that we've heard a lot in Denver Public Schools, and marrying the idea that we use context to teach to teach language proficiency and how that does apply. And again, thinking about the augmentation that Doc spoke about, how do we support teachers in marrying the old ways and overlap that with the strong augmentation and supports of CKLA, I think could be huge.
Something that, again, you know, as far as both of you have alluded to, as far as we've gone through these questions and have made reference as far as the families of our EL students. And either one of you, as far as, would you sort of touch on that as far as not only is it the benefit or what you see as possibly the benefit to the student in the classroom, but what is the residual benefit that you're seeing or experiencing with families of these students?
Doc, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous benefit to the family. You know, my parents were ministers and they learned how to read the Bible. So that's a very rigorous document. But some of these kids don't have access to any books. And, you know, it's, you know, someone asked me, how do you close the achievement gap and so a very famous Harvard professor said, look, you got to start with 0 to 2 and having students exposed to read, talk, and play. And the families are the ones that do that. We now know a couple of superintendents that go take packages to the families in the hospitals because they don't know what they don't know. And a lot of our immigrant families, think about those 6 people that were killed on the bridge in Baltimore at working at 1 o'clock in the morning. All 6 of those individuals were immigrants at 1 o'clock in the morning working on a bridge. So they're very busy. And so they want their students and their children to learn how to read. They know that if you can learn to read, you can read to learn the rest of your life. But it's not that easy. And so they need support. They don't have skills. And so I think these resources that should be available. And, you know, in Dallas, we started a program called Start Strong Dallas, where we tried to educate with our partners 0 to 18 months of just given exposure. And then we had a very strong pre-K program. But if you wait till pre-K to introduce sounds and thoughts, then you're already behind. Our results of any kid that went to pre-K, they're 2 years ahead of kids that didn't go to pre-K by the time they get to third grade. But that's not good enough. So, and the families are the ones that are responsible in the early years. But we have to help them. And I think there are some very innovative superintendents now that have realized that. And they're marshaling community resources because to make sure that these students aren't behind when they hit the schoolhouse door.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think you're absolutely right. I think in addition, what we've seen is, you know, these parents are bringing their students and trust us to be the experts and support their students. I think in addition that we ask these students who have come to us from such long and stressful journeys, they carry such a burden for their families. And you think about the number of students that are translators for their families, that help navigate systems for their families, that create opportunities for their families through their language acquisition. This is a burden that's been put on these students that they're willing and able to shoulder, but we need to give them the supports. And I think by providing that partnership and that buy-in, getting that buy-in from families, they see us as community partners and they build trust with us. And that's imperative, right? They see us as the experts and we have an obligation to respond as such and to support them. So, you know, I think this is not only a benefit for the students, but it's a benefit for the family. And, you know, I watch these students navigate that role in their households, which in many cases is stressful, but they take it on with such pride and such opportunity. And so I think that can be great.
John, I want to add something.
Yeah, please do.
You know, I was notorious that, you know, in what I did my tour, my listening tour on my entry plan, very sophisticated. Then after that, after I heard from everybody, then I went and did my Great Expectations tour. And I got criticized for it because the role of parents comes up. And parents need to be involved. And when parents are involved and they're involved appropriately, it's a big support. But I would get in trouble a little bit because I would say that, you know, we can't blame the parents if the kids are not being successful. And so it wasn't part of my strategy to be successful because one of our participants said a lot of them are illiterate. They get here and they don't have the tools. But at least they have the awareness and the support. They can, just like with a good science reading program that augments, the parents can augment when they can. But I, you know, we're the ones that are responsible for the students being successful. And our teachers will have such a tough job and they're asked to do so many things that we need the parents. But if the parents aren't involved, we can't throw away the kids. That's not how we work.
I'm glad you brought that up because, again, I've been monitoring the attendee chat as it comes through. And you both used this word and comments were coming up as far as giving examples of what do you mean by augmenting? And what you referenced. And so, Doc, that was a beautiful piece right there because you used it not only as far as looking at from the student, but also looking at for the parents as well. And you know, and I when I was asking this as far as, again, it goes back to that messaging. Have either of you seen as far as, again, as we grow and educate the child, does the family benefit from that learning as well? And I think that's something that you've also addressed as far as that the child is going home and maybe teaching the rest of the family what they've learned in school that day. And that, again, becomes part of that, what we're seeing with that conversation. Anything you want to add to that as far as to sort of dispel, yeah, I guess, the conversation as far as why science of reading might not apply? What would we say to dispel that? Doc, you were getting ready to say something.
No, I think everything can be said. We had videos of kids that in our Pathways in Technology program, the kids got an associate's degree in high school where they inspired their parents to go back with them to community college and their parents went back. So you can imagine that's at the end of the pipeline. At the beginning of the pipeline, when the parent sees a student that can now read, it brings them joy. And I think that in the parent may never admit it, but then they also start figuring out how to get enough literacy to be successful in this world of work where you have to have it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just would add to that. I think that, Doc, what you talk about is when we increase our ability to our expectations of kids, they always rise to that challenge. They always rise and meet that bar and in many cases exceed it. And this is a great example. And I also want to double down that parents send us their best and brightest every day. They don't have a better child waiting in the wings. They send us their best and brightest every day. And as experts and as leaders and as community leaders, educators are there to support the family and to help solve this issue. And so, you know, I think they have a tremendous faith in us that we can do it. And I know that we have faith and confidence in our kids.
Okay, Tony, that brought a big smile to my face. Thank you. Thank you. Well, as we move along, one of the things as far as I want to thank, Doc, did you have something or you good?
No.
Okay. I just want to thank everyone for joining us. And, you know, it's one of those that I want to remind everyone to not forget to join the EdWed community. See all your questions answered after the broadcast is saved. You will be able to access those and get information. And I want to point you to one more resource. To look on the right side of your screen there, it's what's referred to as the EdWeb office hours. We have Rachel Hawthorne, who's a project developer of really great reading. She has a background in linguistics and has taught for several years, but she's going to be available Friday, May the 3rd at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So make the time adjustment accordingly. But she will be available, again, with office hours to discuss EL strategies for your classroom. So please take advantage of that. As we shared earlier in the broadcast, we have a question and answer folder available to post questions to our speakers. And we'll not be able to answer all of them for sure, but we will try to get at least maybe two or three of them before we wrap up. And if you'll also look, you'll see where our speakers have been really gracious to share their contact information should you have additional questions. So, if we could see what we have here. Okay, here's a question. Doc, how are you supporting Dr. Fagans, which is Memphis's new superintendent coming in? Welcome to Dr. Fagans. With having an emphasis on the science of reading and foundation skills. And apparently this is an employee there in early literacy in Memphis, Shelby County Schools. Doc, what would you say?
Well, I'll be spending next Saturday and Sunday with her and her team as we try to transition. And one of the first things we're going to cover is their current academic performance. And then with the experiences that I have, I will be able to see where they are and see how we can help them. Dr. Fagans has a great opportunity to be very successful in Memphis, Shelby County. And the council was proactive in trying to put up some systems to support her. But if you don't get literacy right, the rest of it's not going to matter. So obviously it's going to be a big part of the conversation, and there, you know, it's a big job, and she's a very smart lady, and I think she'll have a great opportunity for success there, and we're going to help her with that. And so it's next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock when y'all are sleeping, we're going to be talking about literacy.
Caitlin, thank you for that question. Again, as another Tennessean there, that's something that we can all watch and see how that takes place. Excellent question. Next question up, please. Okay, here's a question, comment from Sandra. I agree, preschool is too late to introduce letters and sounds, which, you know, Doc referenced too. Families need supports. What are the best supports to help families augment science of reading at home? Tony, Doc?
Yeah, we work really heavily with our foundation to send home reading kits and reading skill kits that really reinforce some of the phonemic aspects of it, letter sounds, letter knowledge, but then also sight word recognition. So for lack of better words, some of the skill and drill components of it, but also literacy opportunities in native language so that the family can be involved. And so I think there's a both and component to that, to gain, engage the family's support, but then also provide some of those tools and resources that are aligned to the curriculum that allow us to progress and move forward.
Yeah, that's a great question, Sandra. And I think people are just now realizing how important this is. I mean, if I had to shake some trees for professional companies to realize that you had to do that, then a lot of people don't even think about it. They don't know how reading works. And so now that the professional community has woken up to it, I think, though, there needs to be, to your point, ways to get it to the family sooner, especially the ones that would be willing to help do that. And there are some very specific tools that the professionals that are in the bilingual associations in Texas and all over the country, they know exactly what those are. I'm not the resident expert, but they are, but I know how to get to them. And they're the ones that helped me in this charge. And now that people have realized how important that is, we need to take it to the next level to the parents. So thanks for bringing that question up.
Okay, thank you. Do we have another question here that we can still get to? Oh, here's one from Yamil. What kind of assessments are multilingual learners taking to show what they really know in their home language? Equity?
Let me start with that. And that's the home language survey. Oh, my goodness. It's so generic. It just tells us that they can't read English, or that they have another language. It's not a tool that is diagnostic about why. So that's the first step. And there are other assessments that, and I think, you know, a lot of people are afraid of artificial intelligence, but here's a place where artificial intelligence could really, I've seen some, the good side of some artificial intelligence that would really help diagnose issues and how, where to start with their home language. Equity is always an issue, but, you know, I'm not an equity warrior. I'm an equity provider. I don't talk about it. I do it. And, you know, that's what Start Strong Dallas was. That's what pre-K program was. That's what our turnaround program is. If you don't, you know, some people believe in equity. Some people want to be principal. They don't want to do principal. Some people want to be superintendent. They don't want to do superintendent. Some people believe in equity until you say boo, then they run the other way. Well, that's not me. But I don't brag about it until I do it. But this is all about equity.
Good response. Let's take one more question. What do you look for in EL offerings to determine high quality augmentation that will support teachers and students? This is a question from Lauren. Who wants to try that one?
Oh, that, I mean, there's a lot of things you look at, but I think it's about usability. It's about absorbability. I think it's about the teacher's perspective on it, as well as, like, does it meet or align to your core curriculum? And so when I think about the augmentation aspect of it, is it consistent and coherent? It's something that we really assess. And again, I shout out our curriculum department and our multilingual education department, who really dives deep into not only our curriculums, but the EL curriculums that are supplementing that support. I think it's great that we have that resource in Denver, but I think you have to look at it from multiple perspective and think about it from the student, the teacher, and the implementer, if it's not the teacher's perspective as well. So those are some general things that we think about as we go into the conversation.
Go ahead, Doc. Go ahead.
All they want to add is that now people are having the conversation about augmentation. And then that is really, when people have that epiphany, now you're headed in the right direction. And people smarter than me will tell you what is high quality and what is not, because I don't know that from my 40,000 foot level.
But that's why we have those people that make that a full-time profession, being able to review that for us. As a reminder to our audience, we certainly cannot get through the volume of questions, but they will all be answered and they will be housed where, if you've joined the community, you will have access to that and you will be able to make that available. We have one more poll. Want to thank our sponsor, Really Great Reading, for making this broadcast available. And so with this, what would you like to have access to regarding Really Great Reading programs? Jimmy, if you could pull that up so we can see what our audience would like to see, what they need, would probably be more appropriate.
Yeah, this is really important, because this is how we can support and assist you guys. And all of these resources will be added to our EdWeb community. And if you see any, or if you don't see one of the resources that you would like on the list, just drop that in the chat and we'll take note of that.
Okay. And look at what we're seeing already. All of the above.
All of the above. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I understand. While that poll is populating, Doc, Tony, 30 seconds, what would you have as closing comments to our audience? If anything, in giving them hope.
No, I think that I would just say that people get it now. People are starting to get it, and that gives me hope. And I'm a very optimistic person. And now that there are a lot of smart people working on this, and so I think when they realize that it has to happen, I think that we'll have some great products and services that have come to support our students.
Yeah, I want to double down on that. I think having a conversation is the first part, but collectively working towards solutions and collaborating in venues like this and working with strong vendors like Really Great Reading, but also Donna, creating this space so we can have these conversations and learn from one another. I perused through the poll and we're going to figure this out together. And I think this is just the beginning of some great conversations that change the face of language instruction.
Absolutely. Also a reminder, this is the first of a four-part series that's going to be hosted by Really Great Reading, addressing the science of reading and how we can provide resources and support for those that are delivering these services. I want to, again, thank our panelists, not only for their time, their expertise, their passion for this work, this really important work that we are doing. And again, if you'll look at the snapshots, they are providing their contact information. I've included mine as well. And in any way that we can help you navigate through this, we are there to help, to assist. And again, and I cannot underscore enough as far as thanking Really Great Reading for sponsoring this broadcast. Obvious by the record number of attendees that we're seeing that this is not only a critical topic, but one that people are wanting assistance and help. And with that, I thank you and everyone have a great day.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording, Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.